Support for Soundwaves from the Underground is brought to you by 24tix.com, the most convenient way to buy tickets to your favorite local concerts. Save time, save money, rock out. 24tix.com, your ticket to the experience.
What are you making for breakfast this morning?
Some pancakes and eggs.
Any special kind of pancakes?
Great pancakes.
Great pancakes.
Great pancakes. Heavy, cute pancakes.
I tried to get them.
No, you didn't.
But you wouldn't let me.
You didn't try at all.
I'm Dan Nalen, and this is Soundwaves from the Underground, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, distributing free monthly issues about music, art, action, sports, and subculture. In this episode, it is all things film festival for the January film festival season in Utah. We have Slam Dance, we have the LDS Film Festival, and of course, Sundance on tap. Slam Dance was founded in 1995. It is the smaller of the two major festivals in Park City, Utah, and Salt Lake City this time of year. It was created to promote independent film by makers who are more self-governed and self-financed than some of the big dogs at the Sundance Film Festival. Some of the major films you may have heard that have come out of Slam Dance include The King of Kong, Paranormal Activity, and its, many, many sequels, and Mad Hot Ballroom. This year, the festival is presenting 13 world premiere films and 7 U.S. premiere films, as well as 26 world and 21 U.S. premiere short films. Slug writer Jory Carroll spoke on the phone with one of the festival's original founders and its president, Peter Baxter, about the event and this year's lineup.
For people who don't know much about Slam Dance Film Festival, what kind of sets it apart from all the others that take place around the country?
Well, I think what sets Slam Dance apart is really that it's a showcase for raw and innovative filmmaking. And it's self-governed by filmmakers. The program this year has once again been chosen by the filmmakers that have been at the festival before. And hence our mantra, by filmmakers, for filmmakers. And this is really important to us because what we're trying to create for the emerging filmmaker is a kind of a level playing field, really, for those filmmakers coming from all around the world that have, been making truly independently made film on, smaller budgets in their own way, and to, to showcase all of this great work together in this kind of democracy, that we've been working on here at Slam Dance since 1995. I think we've sort of found our place now, really, in the film world because of all of the great filmmakers that have come through that organization. I mean, Chris Nolan got his start at Slam Dance. Jared Hess's first film, Palooka, was a short film which is, based on Napoleon Dynamite. There really is now, a lot of really great filmmakers that have, got their first start, their first showcase at Slam Dance, and I think that's what sets us apart.
Besides the films themselves, what are some of the other events that take place at Slam Dance? I remember, last year you guys had Q&As with directors and actors. What kind of some of the events are going on this year again?
Last year we had these Coffee With events, which were really, really popular and featured Neil Young and Jonathan Demme in one, and then Stanley in another. The great thing about these is that because of our environment and our community, which these artists are really feeling, the closeness, they really do open themselves up and share with our filmmakers what it's been like for them during their career. And it's, so often when you hear interviews, you hear about just the good things, all the great things that have happened. And, these are obviously artists really at the sort of the peak of, achievements have been, awesome, especially in comparison with the filmmakers at Slam Dance that are just starting out. But what's been really great about these Coffee With events, and it's something that we're going to be continuing this year, is that how then these artists really open themselves up to also tell us sort of the pitfalls as well, or the difficulties that they've had in their careers, creatively and otherwise. And one point that really rung true for me last year, and I think for a lot of people in the audience, was when Neil Young talked about failure, which was, it's a very difficult word to understand coming from, coming from Neil Young. But it was really encouraging and inspiring to hear how, someone, an artist like this, is saying to, all of our artists that you need to embrace failure. Failure is your friend. And so this is one of the reasons why we do the Coffee With events, is to inspire, to educate, and to bring our community together, really in support of our emerging artists. And of course, the audience members also really like this too, because it's very personal, one-on-one, you know, literally with a coffee with someone like a Neil Young. We're going to be doing more of these this year. And we haven't announced our lineup right now, but once again, it's going to be, I think, just as awesome as it was last year.
Describe the process, what it's like trying to, you know, you guys get thousands and thousands of films submitted to you each year. What's the editing process trying to number those films down to just a select few for the festival?
It all kicks off really in the early summer, where we do a call for entries. All of our films are from blind submissions, so they all then enter the submission process. And this year we received over 5,000 submissions, and it's a very competitive one. And our programmers number to begin with around 70. And what we do is that when the submissions come in, we tell the entrant that their film will be watched at least twice to try and give them give their work a real fair shot.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, then you can, you know, just by these numbers, you can sort of see how many times we watch films during the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge commitment, but it's one that we're really excited about, you know, to see promise of the underground in this environment. It's kind of an awesome experience. All the programmers are just, you know, absolutely invested in this, to the point where nearly all of them will watch way over 100 films each. You know, at the end, November time, what happens is that after films have been watched and marked and discussed, suddenly program comes together really in sort of one day. We make no selections beforehand. It's all done in a discussion with the programmers after all the films that have finally made the final weekend once again looked at and discussed. And then through, you know, fair argument, discussion, love, passion, tears, blood, the program is selected. So that's how we do it. And didn't realize until quite recently, actually, that I don't think there actually is another festival that actually has that process. What I think happens a lot of time at film festivals is that they invite films along the way. They may see them at other festivals, or they may have invited them directly without the film submitting. But again, what stands Slamdance apart here in this programming process is that all of our films are selected through blind submissions. So everyone really then has, we believe, you know, a fair chance of getting in, even though obviously now it's really competitive.
Because you guys get so many submissions each year, do you see Slamdance maybe expanding in the future in some capacity, whether by accepting more films or expanding the length of the festival?
Yeah, we do. And one of the ways we're doing that is that we've started actually Slamdance Studios, which involves distribution of Slamdance films year-round. So we realized that obviously there are many more films that we'd like to program at the festival, but we just don't have room for. We also realized that the community that we have in Park City, indeed in Utah, is really important to this organization. It's really a great chance for filmmakers to come together, meet one another, find strength in that, and to, you know, gain the audience reaction, which can, you know, sometimes through industry members being there, just through a lively audience and the energy that creates, you know, a really great start for their filmmaking careers. But it's difficult to expand on that. We've often thought about doing that in Park City, but if we, you know, we believe that we'd sort of lose an essence, if you like, of what, you know, of what we're all about, which is a very close-knit community where our programmers, our production team, sponsors even, are very close then to supporting our filmmakers. So then the question arises out of that, as you just really asked, well, what else can we do to support filmmakers then that don't get into the festival with films which we also think are great? The answer to that is really, I think, in our go forward, to create something which is, you know, more virtual, so that for those people that don't get a chance to come to Park City and see our films, they can see them on all the online platforms. And that's why we started 3 years ago now our Xbox platform, where you can see Slamdance films now year round, as well as actually with a festival showcase that we're doing this year as well. Mm-hmm. And in 2013, we're going to be really expanding what we're doing here online so that you'll see Slam Dance films on many more platforms. So, you know, we believe that as much as the films are popular in Park City, it can also become quite popular with worldwide audience. There's nothing to stop us now from doing that.
Being compared to Sundance, obviously, but both festivals run at the same time. Has that been helpful for your Slam Dance Festival, or do you think that kind of draws some of the attention away from you guys?
I think by having Slam Dance and Sundance in the same place actually has been really beneficial to Slam Dance, but I think more importantly than that, I think it's actually been beneficial to independent world of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that if you look at both, you can sort of, you know, you can see the differences. I don't know what you think those differences are, but I think most people would say that, okay, well, at Slamdance I'm going to get this, and Sundance I'm going to get that. And what that really means is that, you know, at Slamdance you're going to see these emerging filmmakers coming through, pushing on through, that are going to be the next, you know, Chris Nolans, Ben Zeitlin. And of course, you know, some of these filmmakers' works actually then will, and new works, will be at Sundance. But the point is, the route where they first got their showing, where they first got their leg up, was at Slamdance, and that helped get them going, to propel them forward, and really a great chance to help launch their careers. And I think that's what people that come to Slamdance are excited about seeing, kind of this promise of the underground coming through. And of course, at Sundance, you have something which is, you know, more mature. You have something which is bigger in many ways, obviously in its physical size, but also in terms of accomplishment, what already a lot of filmmakers there have achieved and have been recognized for already.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put those two things together, I think it really makes for a very special independent filmmaking experience.
Yep.
So I see it as a great positive, and it also attracts a lot of industry members to both. It's certainly worked out very well then for our filmmakers, though it's not easy to put on the festival production in Park City. We've been, you know, incredibly happy to have been in Park City for so long. See no reason at the moment to change that.
Like you said, Slam Dance began in 1995, and, you know, it seems like each year it gets a little bigger and bigger. Are you satisfied with the reputation Slam Dance has built for itself, or do you think there's still, you know, some room to improve and more room to grow?
I think, yeah, I mean, I'm always looking to develop and to grow and to do more for our filmmakers. Kind of unbeknownst throughout this whole process, you know, we've created a brand. And as we know today in the commercial world, brands are important. But what's really most important to Slam Dance is that, you know, in the end, the integrity of that brand, what it really stands for. I think that in its go forward, we want to obviously then get our films out there to a bigger worldwide audience, but we have to do that in a way which is going to be, you know, integral, you know, to what this brand, to what our organization has stood for. And so we have to do it on our own terms. You hear the word sellout here. Well, obviously we've been around for now, this is our 19th festival, so, you know, we haven't sold out. In the go forward then of providing these opportunities to see Slam Dance films, you know, year round on all these digital platforms, we have no intention of, you know, of doing that. So it's really about developing, you know, a wider audience on our own terms.
Slam Dance will take place from January 18th until January 24th in Park City at the Treasure Mountain Inn on Main Street. For a complete rundown of all the films and schedules, their writing competition, and other information, visit them online at slamdance.com. Huldra are an ambient metal band from Salt Lake that you may have heard on our recent local music roundtable. They originally formed in 2010, and the five members released their debut EP, Signals from the Void, in November of 2011. More recently, they released a split EP with Dustbloom over the summer of 2012. Now the band is ready to release their first full-length album called Monuments, Monoliths. We're going to listen to the song Monuments off of that new full-length right now.
They
Huldra will be releasing their album at the Shred Shed on January 12th with Oxcross, Eons, and Founders of Ruin also on the bill. For more information on the band, visit them online at facebook.com/Huldra the Band. The LDS Film Festival has been around since 2001, featuring independent movies that help promote the work of filmmakers of the Mormon faith to movie-going audiences while remaining unaffiliated with the church in any official capacity. The festival includes Q&A sessions with directors and even a 24-hour mini film festival where new directors create short films for a quick competition. Slug writer Alex Springer sat down in the Soundwave studio with festival organizer Brandon Smith to talk about the LDS Film Festival.
How did the festival begin?
The festival began back in 2001 with Christian Wusser. He's an Austrian filmmaker who came over to BYU to study film. He just saw an opportunity that was, it was kind of on the heels of kind of a big Mormon cinema wave. And so he saw the opportunity and created it. And it's been going strong ever since.
Yeah, as far as submissions go, about how many do you receive each year? What's the average?
We'll probably see upwards of 40 to 50 short films submitted and a handful of feature films, probably 10 to 12. And then these films can be called special screenings, which are shorter than a feature film, but longer than a short film, like 20 to 60 minutes. And we'll see probably a good 10 to 15 of those come through. And I guess if you count, we do a sponsor like a 24-hour filmmaking marathon where filmmakers go out and shoot a 3-minute film in 24 hours and then turn it in and then we screen it at the festival. So if you count those, because we probably have 40 to 50 entries of those every year. So it's a significant number of different filmmakers and films.
I was interested to see the 24-hour film competition. Can you explain a little bit more how that works?
Sure. So a week before the festival, starting on Friday morning, usually at 10 o'clock in the morning, a bunch of filmmakers will show up to the Sarah Center of the Arts is where we host the festival, but they'll show up at 10 and basically we reveal a theme for filmmakers to follow, which could be, it's pretty broad, it could be like redemption, and then they'll have an object which they have to work into the film, and so it's something like a candle or a bar of soap or a dollar bill, something pretty generic, and then we give them a partial line that they need to work into their script. And so it'll be like, one of them was like, sometimes I wonder, and then you have to kind of continue from there. And so it's a challenge for these anywhere from 30 to 50 groups to come up with an interesting, compelling, funny story or dramatic story that they can fit these criteria inside of the film. And then the next morning, Saturday morning at 10 a.m., they have to turn in a finished 3-minute film. The first couple of years I actually did one before I was actually with the festival, and it's quite an experience, and you're up all night editing, and it's kind of a trip. It's fun to do if you have a couple of film friends.
And that wouldn't surprise me if some of your best and worst kind of entries came from that, like, because I imagine that you probably get a group of people that's like how they work and they do an awesome job, but then I imagine there are some people who kind of get into it and they don't really know what they're like, what to expect, and so I bet some cool results come from that.
Yeah, and that honestly, like the screening for the marathon films is one of the funnest because of that very reason.
Yeah.
So you'll see some really nice polished work. You'll see some films that are technically not very good, but hilarious, really funny films. And so you don't know what you're gonna get. And well, also, which I forgot to mention, is you can only have a team of 5 people, cast and crew. So you're just this little group going around making these films. And so all these teams get together, they bring all their friends, and then big auditorium, or big theater, I guess, full of people. It's a fun experience.
As far as judging goes, do you have different judges each year, or how do the judges work for the festival?
For the whole festival, well, we, like I said, we only judge the short films. It's different every year, but we'll take a film critic. I know Cody Clark from the Daily Herald. He'll usually review the films, and then we'll take like a couple of different filmmakers who are feature filmmakers. A lot of times it's the filmmakers that have features that are playing in the festival that year, and we'll just select a group of people that we feel that would give us a good broad judging. They'll judge those, and it's kind of the same for the marathon as well, where we'll take whoever, because the marathon's like on Thursday night and that's right in the middle of the festival, and so we'll just take a couple different filmmakers who were, because a lot of feature filmmakers or filmmakers that are really doing great things that are doing presentations that year at the festival, we'll grab them and pull them aside and have them go in and then judge the festival.
How does the LDS culture come into play as far as the films are concerned?
That's a good question, and that's kind of what the festival is based around, because I think when some people hear the name of the festival, there's like a knee-jerk reaction where they say, that sounds kind of cheesy, or that sounds like cheesy, lame seminary videos or something to that effect.
Yeah, there's like a stigma there.
Exactly. And that's before they've really checked out the festival. And for us, we're not out to define what LDS cinema is, because if you really try to define it, it's actually quite hard. You take a film like Napoleon Dynamite, which, you know, had an LDS director, culturally was small town Idaho, very similar to like what a lot of people grew up LDS. And, you know, so some people would say, well, that could be an LDS film, but it doesn't actually have LDS characters to that effect. Or you have LDS filmmakers out there shooting all sorts of topics, documentaries, feature films and that sort. So our purpose of the festival isn't to come out and say, well, this is what LDS film should be or is. What we do is we basically use the festival as like a vehicle to explore what direction LDS film is going, whatever it is. And so a lot of people will say, well, do you have to be LDS to submit a film, or do you have to have LDS subjects? And we say, no, they could be cultural, they could be, I mean, I think, what was it, 2 or 3 years ago, we showed a film where a film company from LA came out to Utah and shot a Jewish baseball movie. And they used a lot of local talent who happened to be an LDS actor. And so we were excited and wanted to show it. And some people were kind of like, well, that's strange because that's a Jewish film. To us, that's interesting. And that's part of the conversation or part of the discussion that we like to have every year to discuss, you know, what exactly LDS cinema is.
Already talked about this, but I kind of get the vibe that it's not necessarily that you're catering to a predominantly LDS audience. So people who are not LDS feel comfortable at this film festival?
I think so. I mean, if you were to look at any of our festivals from years prior and look at and see what kind of the content that we're showing, on average, I'd say there's probably maybe 25% that's actually something that's made probably just for Mormons to see, or who would find that interesting. And then you have like 75% that's more to the general audience, especially with our short films, where we have two different blocks of short films that are 2 hours long, and those just range from any subject, and then they could be anywhere from drama to documentaries, fantasy kind of stuff. Like, it's just all across the board. You'll see animation in there. And, you know, you might catch one little documentary that's kind of LDS driven, but generally speaking, someone could come. I mean, it's all material that's pretty family friendly, though. I mean, there's not anything that's like really explicit in the festival, but I feel like anybody who is interested, there's, especially with the documentaries, there's a wide range of stuff that I think people would be able to find something in the festival that they would enjoy.
The 12th Annual LDS Film Festival will run from January 23rd to January 26th at the Sarah Center for the Arts in Orem. For more information on the festival, visit them online at ldsfilmfestival.org. This is your weekly daily calendar for slugmag.com. And as always, you'll want to hit slugmag.com and check out all the events that are being updated as we speak for every day. Also, you can always put your own events on there free of charge or for a mere $5 a month, $50 a year. You can add a bunch of really cool content. But again, always go back and check it out, slugmag.com. We record this baby a little bit in advance, so things change. Things get updated. Lots of more cool stuff happens. But there's plenty of cool stuff already. I'm going to start on Tuesday, January 8th with Elvis Tribute Night at Muse Music in Provo. I don't know any more than that, and that's all I need to know. If there's anything Elvis involved and there's local bands paying tribute, I'm there. That sounds great. Wednesday, January 9th. Rarely will I recommend you go out to West Valley City to the Hale Center Theater, but in this case I will. They're doing a production right now called The 39 Steps, which is actually a spoof on an old Alfred Hitchcock movie in which a couple of characters play literally hundreds of roles. Well, maybe not literally. Almost literally hundreds of roles, frantically running around the stage. I actually saw this show down at the Shakespeare Festival in Southern Utah a couple years ago, and it's a blast. It's really fun to watch. It's a good activity. You know, date night, something chill. Go out and get drinks beforehand since you are at the Hale Center Theater. There's no cocktails there to be had. Friday, January 11th, and also on Saturday, January 12th, up in Park City at the Egyptian, a really great female blues singer, Shamika Copeland, is playing. She was born in Harlem, but she is the daughter of Texas blues legend Johnny Copeland. I have seen her before. She's come through town for years, played the old Zephyr, played different blues nights, done some really solid recording for Alligator Records. And that theater up there, the Egyptian, it's a really great place to see a great musician. It's small, sound is really good. I've seen a lot of great shows there. So put that on your calendar for the weekend of January 11th and 12th. Also on Friday, January 11th, a fine show at the Garage, David Williams, with the Joshua Payne Orchestra and Pentagram Crackers. Some great local stuff there. Saturday, January 12th, it's Slug localized time once again at Urban Lounge. Screaming Condors, Simeon Greed, Cancer Culture. Be sure to pick up an issue of the January edition of Slug Magazine, read all about them. The same night, some of you inevitably will go see The Used playing their 50th or 60th show here in Salt Lake City. I will say this about the Take Action Tour, though. The tour that they're currently headlining, it's always a great cause. They're usually doing something like suicide prevention fundraising with the Take Action Tour. So no matter what you think of The Used, good or ill, it's a great cause to go to that show, no matter who the bands are. Sunday, January 13th. A very hyperactive bluegrass slash newgrass band, Trampled by Turtles. They've become regulars around here. They've played at Urban Lounge. They've played at the Depot. This time, they're playing up at Park City Live. So if you're jonesing for something to do on a Sunday night, that is a fine option. And then Monday, January 14th, those low-down, dirty Miami Heat are in town against the Utah Jazz. So go try to find a cheap ticket. I doubt you will, but it's an option. That's your weekly daily calendar. Check out slugmag.com, as always, for updated listings, and be sure to add anything you have going on free of charge. The Screaming Condors are a punk metal band from Salt Lake who started out originally in 2004 under the name Hot Buttered Fart Pumper, and I can't imagine why that name did not last. How are we not hearing that band 8 years later? The group changed their names, released a couple of albums over the past 8 years, and the most recent was a 2010 full-length called Nature's Nightmare. We're going to play a song off of that record. This is called Distant Love. Screaming Condors are headlining this month's localized show at the Urban Lounge, playing with Simeon Greed and Cancer Culture. Tickets are just $5 with the show starting at 10 p.m. To read more about Screaming Condors, check out our January issue, which you can find anyplace cool or, of course, on slugmag.com. Hard to believe, but the Sundance Film Festival has reached 29 years old, and it has grown into arguably the biggest film festival in the world, definitely in North America, all respect to Toronto. One of the biggest changes to the festival this year came before the lineup was even announced, as the organization appointed two new co-directors to oversee the festival. Slug's managing editor, Esther Moronio, chatted on the phone with the festival's new directors, Lori Hopkins and Sarah Pierce, about their new positions and the 2013 festival.
You both have new positions at the Sundance Institute, and I know that a lot of people are really familiar with the Sundance Film Festival, but might not really know much about the institute that's behind it. Would one of you like to kind of tell me a little bit about it?
You're absolutely right. The festival is our most visible event and our largest year-round program, but the Institute does have a much broader range of artist support and public programs. So we have, for example, a feature film and documentary film program that conduct global outreach and engagement with filmmakers year-round. So most notably, this happens through our labs, which are signature workshops that are mostly at the Sundance Resort. And so filmmakers come and work on script refinement and like how to work with actors and music. And also now we're broadening the scope into marketing and impact. And so that's an example of a couple of other programs we have and how we activate on those programs that are different than this really public-facing event like the festival. And I'd like to add a couple of others just, you know, by way of familiarity. We also have a native film program that does the same type of work as the other two programs, but with a focus on Indigenous filmmakers around the world. In addition to our independent filmmaker focus, we also support theater artists through our theater program based out of New York. We have an office there, a very small one, but we have an office. And, you know, a lot of this kind of program and impact work really does go on behind the scenes, out of the public eye.
Even though you guys are mostly based up in Park City, would you say that most of the filmmakers who take part in these programs are nationally based or internationally based, or do you get a lot of local support as well?
Essentially, we are definitely, our heart is here in Utah, and, you know, we do have an office where a lot of our programs are in Los Angeles, but we are a national and international organization. And just, you know, roughly about 30 to 35% of the artists that we support are international. And the rest are, of course, national. And we do have a lot of, you know, local artists as well. So it's we cast our net pretty wide.
And how many of those filmmakers would you say end up entering the film festival? Are you kind of trying to generate filmmakers to submit to the festival, or is it just kind of, you know, just any artist, really?
You know, we allow anyone to submit their work to the festival, and many of the lab artists, you know, that we support through the labs do submit their films to the festival. But it's not a guarantee that you would get into the festival because you've been through one of our other programs. Mm-hmm. Every film is weighed on its own merit when it gets to the festival stage. But a lot of the films that go through the labs actually do make it into the festival, so there's a good percentage there.
As I said earlier, both of you have kind of just started these new positions. Can you tell me a little bit about both of your roles and your responsibilities?
Sure. So my part of the co-managing directorship will be focused on administration. So I'll have oversight of our strategic planning, both long and short term, our organizational planning, metrics. I'll oversee legal and office administration. And then I have this big area of finance and human resources.
Great.
And then for my part, I oversee all program operations for the organization, including the Sundance Film Festival and our other public programs, such as Sundance London, and also our lab programs, the operations of those, and as well as our Utah community relations. So any of the public programming that we do in the Utah community throughout the year reports into me.
Laurie, you were part of the Sundance Institute before.
Yes, I was.
Okay.
I was here. I've been at Sundance Institute for 6 years as director of budgeting and administration.
So in this new position, do you plan on making any changes, or what does the role mean to you?
You know, my plan for the future is to build on this healthy organization that we have today and to ensure that we have this really long-term path of mission-based growth and that we're sustainable. You know, I'm really proud of our support of independent film and theater artists, and we really have a unique role as a platform for storytelling. So the way I view my co-managing role is that I really need to focus on ensuring that the infrastructure that the programs have, you know, so the resources and capacity and all of that, that they have what they need to accomplish their activities, to do their work through proper budgeting, you know, a solid office environment, all of that. So I'm really excited to really build on that and make this sustainable for the future.
Initially get involved in the Sundance Institute? What is it that kind of attracted you to it?
Well, you know, I really love mission-based work, and prior to my time at Sundance, I spent several years in a for-profit organization that's also local, Powder Corporation, going through the, you know, finance and accounting world of assistant controller and controller, and I really, as I worked my way through that, I really wanted to look at a nonprofit organization and how I could work in the arts and kind of look at it not from a bottom-line situation, but from a situation where I was supporting a specific group of people, like arts and storytelling. And so this, you know, it really was the perfect blend for me to come to Sundance Institute and be able to work in finance and accounting, but with supporting the mission that we have here at the Institute.
And then, Sarah, you're kind of overseeing more of the programs and things like that. Are there any new implementations that you're planning for the future, or how is everything going to change with you as a co-managing director?
You know, it's a little early to tell since we don't officially take over these roles until the beginning of January, but I've already started brainstorming ways that I can take the operational leadership skills that I've put toward the festival and infuse those across the entire organization. So we've been looking at synergies that we might find through the festival structure that could be applied to lab operations and some of our other programs.
What do you kind of foresee as being the challenging parts of the position?
You know, I'm not sure that I see huge challenges. I'm looking forward to the expanded role and working with the staff from both the lab operations side and the festival to, you know, work together to find more efficient ways to do the work that we do to support the programs.
How did you get involved with the Institute, and what is it that attracted you to it?
You know, I started out as a volunteer in 1999. I was the volunteer manager for the Music Cafe, and it was the first year of the Music Cafe at the festival.
Oh, wow.
And before that, I grew up in Salt Lake, and my sister and I used to go to the festival all the time as festival goers, and both decided that we wanted to get involved, and so I just, you know, I volunteered the 1 year and then was completely hooked and got a job as seasonal staff the next year, and it just evolved from there. So I've been here for almost 15 years now.
So this year, are there any exciting new changes in the festival that you can...
You know, we're not doing any major changes such as adding venues or new programs. We kind of decided to look within this year and really work toward improving the audience experience. So, you know, we're kind of looking at every venue and every theater and seeing ways that we can improve our presentation quality. For example, the theater that we use at the Mark, which is a venue in Park City that's the recreation center, and we use the basketball court and turn that into a movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing some improvements in there with some newish seats, movie theater seats, and then also improving some of the sight lines so that the viewing for the audience is better. Those are the kind of tweaks that we're making. Also, a really big thing for locals is the local individual ticket sales is going to be online this year. I don't know how familiar you are with how we've done it in the past, but People used to have to go stand in line at Trolley Square or at the gateway up at Park City over that weekend to buy tickets, and now we're doing that online. So that should provide a better audience experience for everyone.
What are each of your favorite parts of the film festival once it gets here? I'm sure that you're both busy, you know, behind the scenes, but do you get to, like, go out and experience it a little bit?
I absolutely love to go to a film and be in the audience with the cast or the directors and then have the Q&A afterward. It's just such an incredibly moving experience. It's personal. I'm moved by the films, and I'm hooked.
Last year when I went, that's kind of what I missed about the press screenings. You don't get the Q&A, which is always, like you said, a lot more intimate.
And right, having that direct connection with the artist is so important and makes the experience so unique.
Yeah, and how about you, Sarah?
Well, you know, I have to say one of my most favorite moments every year is going to the Eccles Theater for the very first screening that we do on that Thursday night and seeing the first picture come up on the screen. And I just think, wow, an entire year of work got us to this place, and this is that one moment, and everything's good, and the audience is filled with energy, and it's just so exciting. And when Robert Redford comes out on the stage and introduces the festival, it's just, you know, it makes all the work that you did worthwhile.
I bet. I haven't been to the first screening yet, so maybe that's an experience I'll have to do this year.
Yeah.
The Sundance Film Festival runs from January 17th through January 27th, primarily in Park City, with additional screenings in Ogden and in Salt Lake. For more information on the entire fest and the events happening all during the 11 days, check them out online at sundance.org/festival. As always, thank you for listening to Soundwaves from the Underground, and for all things Slug Magazine, make sure to visit slugmag.com. As we've discussed throughout this episode, this is film festival season, and we will have a roundtable coming up on the back end to talk about all the great things that Slug's writers and editors have seen around Park City and Salt Lake City. We'd also like to hear what you've seen at Sundance, Slam Dance, the LDS Film Festival, or anywhere else. Please send us an email to soundwaves@slugmag.com or call and leave us a message on our automated voicemail line at 858-233-9324. That line's open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and if you give us a good tip, we just might play you on the show. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Esther Moronio, Ricky Vigil, Alexander Ortega, and myself, Dan Nalen. Executive producer is Angela Brown. The theme was performed by Birthquake and recorded by Jesse Ellis. The main logo and art design is by T. Doan, and technical design is by Kate Colgan. You'll definitely want to join us next week when we'll be talking to snowboarder John Cooley. We'll be talking to a Mormon sexologist of all things, and Slug's own Mike Brown will be in the studio to talk about his beloved Utah Jazz. Thank you very much for listening.